Tottenham story is this. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
I love to win, mate. That's the main thing. Hopefully I can fulfil those dreams and aspirations of every Tottenham supporter.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
He's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh!
I'm loving big engines. Guess I'm a Spurs fan now then.
Welcome back to the Tottenham Way podcast. On the back, I'm afraid to say, of the club's fourth successive league defeat. The first time that has happened for 20 years. Bottom line, Liverpool were just too good. Far too good today. Certainly for the first 70 minutes at Anfield. Spurs, well, they were woeful. Up until the arrival of Richarlison and Maddison and Celso and Oliver Skip, who actually, I thought, did really well when he replaced Emerson Royal at left back. They helped to stem the tide to a degree. 4-0 became 4-2. There might have been a penalty for a high challenge on Brennan Johnson. Had that been awarded and Son had converted, then who knows, 4-3 with 7 or 8 minutes to go. It would have been very interesting. It would also have been totally undeserving. And there was dissension within the ranks as well. Vicario had to come between Romero and Royale as the players walked off at halftime. So more doom and gloom. I'm Marcus Buckland, and we have a very special guest for this reaction podcast because Dan is driving back down the motorway. The two Toms are either writing, wailing, or just crying, not in any fit state to conduct a proper response to this particular match. So instead, the brilliant ESPN and La Liga commentator Rob Palmer, who's also covered Premier League games since the late 80s, had either the pleasure or the misfortune, whichever way you look at it, to work in local radio with me back in the late 80s. That's how old we are. He is here. Having sat next to me during the game, we were among Liverpool fans. It was a horrible reminder of the 2019 Champions League final. At least we lasted for more than 36 seconds before conceding a goal today. He did a couple of times have to put his hand gently on my shoulder and tell me to calm down when a Spurs player gave the ball away for the 100th time. He also had to remind me to stand up four times and pretend to be happy when Liverpool scored. But I think it's going to be very interesting, instructive to get his views as a football expert with no prejudice or agenda. And before we get into the game, Rob, you also, I believe, have a Spurs connection. What is that?
Indeed. Stretching back to our days when we worked in local radio together, I came down to London on attachment to the BBC Sports Room, bumped into John Motson, who I briefly knew back in the day. And Motty had just signed a contract to do the Spurs Club Call. Remember that? He used to call in to Spurs to hear the commentary and then the aftermatch interviews with the manager, home and away. And Motty very kindly passed on that contract to me. I don't think he quite fancied following Spurs every single game. So I became the Spurs man home and away for, I think, the majority of the 88-89 season. So, yeah, I am an adopted part of your clan.
Well, it was great to have you back to watch today. I know that you didn't have a foot in any particular camp, but what is your overall assessment of the 11 that Ange Postecoglou put out today? And remember, of course, they've come into the match off the back of this terrible run. He wants the players to fight for the shirt, to show that they're happy to play in this progressive manner of his. Tell us what you thought.
I don't think it's necessarily the manager's job. I know you've been quite critical of him, which is why you brought a pal along to protect you from the social media battering that you've suffered this week after your criticism of the manager. But I don't think it's necessarily his fault. He can't go. Once they cross the white line, he can come up with all of the plans and the data, and he can deliver motivational speeches to the players as well and come up with Ange Ball and his way of playing, which I've seen many times when I was commentating on Celtic games in European football as well. But they didn't adapt today. They didn't go out there. There was no fighting for the shirt. When you're there, the game happens so quick, but we've looked back at the goals as well. Players are out of position. They weren't closing down. They were allowing Liverpool space. And there was only one team in it for 60, 70 minutes of the game today. And there's just a lack of passion, a lack of adaptability. And a lot of players that clearly think they're Premier League players, but they weren't top four players.
I will just say it wasn't a barrage of abuse I got for my comments about Postecoglou. And I do want to stress that I still think he's the man to take the club forward. Clearly, you know, he's a victim to some degree of the amazing start he had. We all suddenly develop these expectations of glory, and that probably wasn't a good thing in hindsight. But there are aspects. We spoke on the podcast during the week about his supposed lack of interest in the set-piece fallibilities, and I just sometimes wonder about his team selection as well. If you look at the 11 today, obviously he keeps tinkering around trying to find a team that's going to work, but Emerson Royale at left back, and the moment they lined up, and there's Mo Salah just across the halfway line from Royal. And I did turn to you. I said, this is an absolute recipe for disaster. I'm no expert. It was a recipe for disaster, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, when you go back, and we've gone back and analysed the goals and seen the replays and seen where the problems come from. And they come from both fullbacks, mainly the left-hand side. And you're quite rightly saying, I'm not a Spurs expert like yourself, but he's the third-choice left-back. He's the third-choice left-back for a reason, because he's not really that good. He's not a top 10 player in the Premier League. And at least two of the goals were his fault. He was out of position, or he wasn't supporting the central defender. At times, me and you were watching the game trying to work out where on earth he was. Were they playing a back five, and all of a sudden he was in a left wing position? Then he was an inverted fullback, but he's supposed to be defending for the team as well. Porro doesn't quite cut it for me. I know he had a big reputation, which is why Spurs invested quite heavily to bring him over to the Premier League. First time I've seen him with my own eyes. Nothing really registered there. I think your two central defenders were quite good. Your goalkeeper, I think we'll get onto that, is a very good goalkeeper as well. But Spurs really didn't show any fight till the half-time whistle went, and they started fighting amongst themselves.
Yes, and that's obviously going to be a concern. You don't want that, although managers usually turn things around when that happens and says, no, it's good. It means that the players care. So I don't know how much that story will develop. But of course, the left-back situation is a problem with Udogie out and Davis out. So he probably didn't have too many other options. Although when Skip came on and played there, actually in his place, I thought he did a pretty good job. I was even more... The things that most concerned me, Rob, were just how often Spurs gave the ball away in dangerous positions. We know we like to pass out from the back and all the rest of it. That's part of this evolutionary process. But it doesn't mean you can afford to keep giving the ball away in dangerous places as much as they did. And it also struck me, and you've touched upon it already, that midfield of Basuma and Sarr and Bentancur just did not have the sharpness or the competitiveness to deal with a marauding Liverpool team. You were talking about how just the sound of the way they hit the ball showed the difference between the two approaches.
Yeah, you know, kind of watching tennis, you know a good shot. You can hear a shot when you're watching tennis. You won't know a good shot at golf, because I've played with you at golf many times, and you wouldn't know a good shot if it hit you on between the eyes off the tee.
But someone will be hitting you between the eyes if you just keep to the subject of football.
But we were 20 rows back, just down by the touchline, and you could hear when Alisson put it out to Trent Alexander-Arnold, or he threw a few at it, volleyed a few to Harvey Elliott. There was a ping, there was a crispness about the passing. You could hear the ball to leather on the boots. With Spurs, it was that old phrase, that easy ozy. Ron Atkinson used to say that, didn't he? They were making passes, but they weren't quite finding. They weren't having to control it. They were playing at about 50, 60% of their capacity, whereas Liverpool was 100%. You're mentioning as well about, you know, attitude. Recently, you've had Mo Salah having an argument with Jurgen Klopp because he wants to play. He wants to be out there on the field. You had Haaland this weekend having a bit of a fracas with Pep Guardiola. These are top-class players that want to be out on the field. The Spurs players that are out there today just didn't look like they wanted to be at Anfield. They looked like they were sparring partners to Liverpool. And there wasn't that aggression. There wasn't that drive. There wasn't that energy. It was a team that was lacking any kind of collective adrenaline today as well. And it was only when he made the substitutions, but we'll counter that by Klopp also making substitutions, that the perfect storm almost arrived.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, to what extent did Spurs themselves get right back into the game with those changes? And to what degree were they helped by the fact that Klopp took off Robertson, Endo, Diaz, McAllister, and eventually Elliot, who was outstanding?
You've just mentioned the best, is that four? You mentioned their best four Liverpool players on the day. And we were sitting amongst the Liverpool supporters, and I do a lot on LFC TV because I live on Merseyside. And if I was on LFC TV tomorrow, they'd be saying, why does Jurgen Klopp make these substitutions so early in the game? And then we lose our momentum in the game. And he did do that. He took off the four players that were making it happen for Liverpool. not sure they've done. They've got a midweek game, have they? I'm not quite sure why he did that. They've not got a 12:30 or anything going on this week. So
don't mention 12:30 kick off.
Sorry, man. You almost knocked your red wine over for the second time.
Yeah, I'll be careful.
So I don't know why he did that, but and crazily enough, at that moment, that's when the Spurs fans, and they were superb today, that they raised their voices. The team raised their game as well, and then he brought on three players of quality who were probably, when they were on the field of play, Spurs three, maybe four best players during the course of the whole afternoon. They came on and really lifted the performance and got a rise out of those around them as well.
Yeah, in particular Richarlison, who they loved to hate at Anfield because of his Everton connections. Of course, he scored at Anfield last season as well. I'm intrigued to get your thoughts on him because rumours behind the scenes would suggest that he is going to be surplus to requirements in the summer as Ange looks to make these painful changes that he spoke about in depth during his press conference on Friday morning ahead of the Liverpool game and straight after the Chelsea defeat. Now, for me, Richarlison today looked like a really good, strong, dangerous focal point to the sort of football he's trying to play. Son, despite the fact that he seemed to want so many touches today, he's trying to do it all. But there was danger when he was then cutting in from the left. Madison's doing his little bits and pieces. That to me was a hint of what might be possible next season. Would you be inclined to keep Richarlison if you were in charge?
I think you definitely keep Son because he is Mr. Spurs. He's perpetual motion. He's the kind of player that Ange Postecoglou wants as well. You saw that when he was at Celtic, which is a pound shot version of hopefully what Spurs will become as well, in that it's all about energy and getting your faces and high press. And Son is certainly that kind of player. He was energised, he was motivated for the last 20, 30 minutes when Richarlison came on, and he had a foil alongside him, as he used to be when he had that other guy, Harry Kane.
Oh, Harry
Kane. Remember him?
Yeah, but, I know what happened to him.
But also, he had a partner. He had somebody to bounce off and somebody to catch the eye of the defender. I just thought today that when Son got it, he was off the pace. He said he was trying to have too many touches. But when he got the ball, and we spoke about this earlier, when you watch good teams, I commentated on Barcelona for many years, Real Madrid at the moment, Manchester City, when you see them play as well, they play in little triangles. One player gets the ball, immediately there's at least two or three other passes on, two short, one long. He looked at Spurs today and players were disappearing. Richarlison wasn't one of those. When he came on, he was certainly motivated. The Liverpool fans were giving him a stick because of his connections. He is a quality player. He's an international class player. He's a Brazilian international. He's probably about the right age as well. He's got a reputation worldwide. So I'm building the guy up to say that you can probably cash in on him, because in these days of financial fair play, you have to make the books balance, and looking at your team to get some money in to finance what the manager would like to do and bring in players in his image, you're probably going to have to cash in on Richarlison. And I'm not sure that he completely buys into the Ange ball, this you've got to be chasing everything down and your heart's got to be beating 150, 160 beats per second. He does sometimes drift through the games when he plays 90 minutes. Mm. Today, his 30-minute cameo, yeah, he was excellent. He was a class act.
You mentioned the goalkeeper. I know you think he's a good shot stopper. Maybe you've got one or two question marks about Vicario. And, he's universally liked. So what's making you just wonder a little bit about him?
As a goalkeeper, I think he's an outstanding goalkeeper. In a previous life, I was a goalkeeper. So I'm part of that union as well. But in the modern day, you have footballing goalkeepers. We saw Alisson today when he's playing the ball out to Elliot and to Trent Alexander-Arnold. He's pinging the ball and it's crisp passing. With your keeper, I think, he gets it out from the back and he gets it to the central defenders, or he gets it to the withdrawn midfield players as well. But there's not a crispness about the passing. He's a very good goalkeeper, but I don't think he's an outstanding footballer. You look at the top two, Alisson, and you look at Edison. I don't think they're probably goalkeepers that are quite as good as him when it comes to shot stopping. He made some great saves today as well, and has been doing in recent weeks. But I don't think if you're going to play that kind of football where he's just giving it to the nearest man, really, or the most open man, without seeing somebody in midfield and able to play a 30, 40-yard pass that's a throw or a kick as well. So I'm not convinced that he's the keeper for that style of play, but I'm willing to be proven wrong. Well, I've only seen him twice.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, today at times Spurs were getting themselves into so much trouble again, playing out from the back, and Dan Kilpatrick will listen to this and roll his eyes and say, oh, Marcus, don't start again. That's what we're going to do. But honestly, yeah, do it, but don't do it as badly as Spurs did. Certainly in the first half, constantly giving that ball away deep inside our own half. You like the two fullbacks. The other player we had a bit of a disagreement about. Definitely not the fullbacks, the two centre backs. The other player we had a bit of a disagreement about was Brennan Johnson. I mean, I'm a big fan. I don't think he's played particularly well in the last week or so, but I think he's got a bright future. Why do you have some reservations about him?
I think he's an above-average player, if I'm really honest. He's the kind of guy that you wouldn't mind as part of your squad when you're playing at a mid- or lower-table team. He looked very good then. But I don't think when he became available last summer with the kind of money that Nottingham Forest were looking for, there were too many takers. Spurs came in and they've taken him and he's done okay. And in his good moments, he looks very, very good. But when he plays against a top team, and that's what you've got to be talking about in the future, Spurs being a Champions League team, not going to happen next season, he isn't, I don't think, proper international quality and top five quality in Champions League. He's a good man to have around. Like Liverpool got a few at the moment, the likes of Gakpo and Jota, Darwin Nunes as well, that maybe aren't quite that very top world-class level. And Johnson's a good guy to have around, but he wouldn't be my starting 11 week in, week out if I was picking Ange Postecoglou's team of next season.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's actually a really good impact substitute, but I do think he's going to become a really good player over the next few years. So just a final thought, Rob, as you rightly said, I got slightly carried away during the week. You know,
it's like a confessional, is it?
Well,
you are forgiven.
It's a bit of therapy when you have
these. Take some of that red wine if there's any left in the glass. I've looked it all over.
A lot of red wine in just a moment. But if you were a Spurs fan, and there are some hopefully still listening despite this run of defeats and rants and all the rest of it, huge game, of course, next weekend against Burnley. Burnley at home, then Manchester City, and that's what a nightmare because we don't want to win that game for obvious reasons. And then Sheffield United, last game of the season. So beating Burnley is essential, but how do you feel Spurs fans should deal with what's been thrown at them over the past few weeks? The first time, as I mentioned, in 20 years, they've lost four in a row. They're shipping lots of goals, lacking creative attacking ideas, which is meant to be the strength of the manager. Even the manager himself is suggesting that he might not be around next season. How should we be dealing with this?
You have to look at it at the bigger picture. I don't know whether he is going to turn out to be one of the best managers in Premier League history. He certainly did very well when he was up in Scotland. He won a lot of friends with his demeanour and the style of football that he played as well, and the imagination that he brought to Celtic and Scottish football. He captured the imagination and he was loved in those first couple of months when he came down to Spurs and the players bought into what he was trying to do, and it was all kind of fresh ideas. And maybe now, I think there's maybe one or two egos in that changing room, one or two that know that they're not part of the long-term plans of the manager, and when he's put them out over the line today, they haven't listened to everything that he's said. They haven't gone in there and they've driven as well. Yeah, I mean, four games for any club like that, especially against the teams that you've lost, will be considered a crisis, and the goals that you're shipping as well. But truthfully, you've got to look at the bigger picture, where you have been in the Premier League this season. Could you be better than fifth place? Truthfully, no. The four teams above you are all better than you. Are you better than the teams below you? Marginally better than the likes of Newcastle and Manchester United as well. Chelsea are coming on strong. West Ham haven't had a bad season. And you're better than all of those. And you've got the building bricks for next season. And I think you've got to give him the tools, the time and the patience as well to impose himself upon the club and bring in the players that can play, you know, this so-called Ange ball.
Thank you, Mr. Robert Palmer, ESPN commentator extraordinaire. Probably his most famous line, and you've got to dig it out, is Wayne Rooney's debut.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Go on, give us that. Give us the bit of commentary. It was against, Arsenal.
I think it was.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, go on. And he'd just come off the bench. I'm getting really excited. We're going off-piste here.
Do you know, though, Tilsley got that line. Now, I actually said Wayne Rooney, remember the name, Sweet 16. He's only just started, or worse that effect. But Messi was my main one, really, when Messi scored. Remember the name, Lionel Messi. The first of many to come.
Oh, well, you're a soothsayer.
I've heard he's signing for Spurs next season, actually. Messi's always been a big fan.
Yeah, well, yeah, I can understand that.
Finney Soundway's posters on his wall.
Oh, my gosh. But this was a high-quality podcast until the thought of Lionel Messi having Vinny Samway's posters on his wall. Rob Palmer, thank you very much indeed. I am going to finish off this glass of red wine before I knock it all over the lovely carpet. We will reconvene, and by we, I mean Dan Kilpatrick, Tom Allnutt and Tom Barkley, later in the week to have further thoughts on the Liverpool match and then look ahead to this huge game against Burnley at the weekend. Until then, come on, you Spurs.